uncertainty, mostly after a talk about the end of uncertainty. It's joint work with Stephanie Venner, who claims she's pictured here. And I'll have to, I guess, use this as the clicker. So the main kind of result is contained in this article here. A lot of what I'm going to be talking or trying to focus on is actually contained in the appendix of this paper. And the main result, basically, is just that the non-locality of quantum theory is determined by the uncertainty principle. And the main message for this audience, I guess, is that I can view non-locality, basically, and uncertainty as effectively in very similar ways as basically the storage of information followed by the retrieval of information. And in some sense, what's going on, the reason that we don't have, say, more non-locality, you can view that basically as a trade-off between Alice's ability to store information and Bob's ability to retrieve information. So Alice's ability to store information is restricted by the no signaling principle and steering and things like this. And Bob's ability to retrieve information is restricted by the uncertainty principle and complementarity. So that's what I'm, and I want to basically relate those kind of concepts together. Okay. So I think 60 years ago, can people see those slides okay there a bit? No. That's better. I'm a bit colorblind, so I tend to use ridiculous colors. Okay. So I think 60 years ago, if you had tried to relate a Bell inequality to the uncertainty relation, that would have been pretty difficult. They look like very different objects. And we're able to do it now just because we have tools from computer science which enable us to see that they're, to recast them into a form which looks very similar. So that, I think, is kind of the key. The result I'm going to present is not technical in the least. It's more about the kind of the view of this view here of kind of looking at non-locality in terms of its constituent components in terms of retrieval and storage of information, and using these tools for computer science like random access codes in order to quantitatively relate the two things. So non-locality and uncertainty are related not just quantitatively, but they're related. Sorry, not just qualitatively, but they're related quantitatively. Okay. I am actually, although it might not be needed for this audience, I am actually going to just kind of go through the CHSH game. So now, rather than looking at a Bell inequality, it's a lot more flexible to think of them in terms of games. They're equivalent, so for every Bell inequality, we can construct some game, and the game looks like this. You have some referee who asks a question S of Alice and a question T of Bob. Alice and Bob can't communicate, but they can have some resource that they share previously, and now they're going to win the game if Alice and Bob's outcomes, A plus B mod 2, is equal to S and T. So they want to agree in three of the situations and disagree. Their answer should disagree in a fourth situation. And of course, we know that classically we can only win this game with probability 3/4. And the reason is that if they need to beforehand, if deterministically they need to choose their answers based on the questions beforehand, then there will always be some contradictions. So if I write out their possible answers depending on the questions and the condition they need that to satisfy, then if I add the rows and the columns, I get a contradiction, 0 = 1, and so we know that they have to, a deterministic strategy will always lose one of those four cases. And of course, any probabilistic protocol is just going to do, can't do better. So for the classical game, we have probability 3/4. For the quantum game, if they use entanglement, they can win with probably 1/2 plus 1 over 2 root 2 using entanglement. And, of course, we know in PR boxes. The bottom of the slides get cut off, so maybe just let me know if you can't see something. And, of course, using a PR box, they can win with probability 1. So the question is, what restricts non-locality? And, of course, we know that the non-signaling condition is not enough, and as we've heard kind of in previous days, a lot of the various other principles, and often information theoretic principles, that you might impose on quantum theory, these are not sufficient to restrict the non-locality of quantum mechanics. And so what we're going to do here is something very different. Rather than relate non-locality to some principle, we're going to relate it to some other aspect of quantum theory. In particular, we should think of uncertainty and non-locality like this. So uncertainty is a restriction on the kinds of measurements you can make on a single system, and non-locality is just a restriction on the kinds of measurement results you get when you make measurements on a joint system. So they're both restrictions on measurements on systems, but one is just a restriction on one system and one is a restriction on two systems. And so what we want to do is we want to relate the kinds of restrictions we get when we perform a measurement on two systems and the kind of restrictions we get when we perform a measurement on one system. And so I've listed the main results here in the paper. What we find basically is that for any theory, any probabilistic, generalized probabilistic theory, not just quantum mechanics, then the degree of non-locality is determined by two things. So we want to relate these concepts to each other. Non-locality is determined by two things. One is the uncertainty principle, and the other thing is steering, which gets a bit less attention in the literature. The notion of steering, I mean. In particular now, if we go to quantum mechanics in particular, then steering doesn't factor into it effectively for all inequalities, for all Bell inequalities, where we know how to calculate the optimal measurements. So in quantum mechanics, non-locality is determined only by the uncertainty principle and no signaling. Okay, steering just kind of factors out. And then the third result is that if we look at complementarity, and I'll maybe explain what I mean by complementarity later, but complementarity is somehow not fixed by these other three concepts of steering, non-locality, and uncertainty. So that seems to be kind of a free, kind of a separate concept, and I think it's something which is an open question in terms of understanding how it relates to these other concepts. Okay. So let's, because I want to relate uncertainty and non-locality using a random access code, let's say what a random access code is. It's basically this. Alice has some information, X, which is we can think of as just a string. So it's a string of bits in this case, X0 up to Xn. So it's a message. She wants to send it to Bob. Usually, we want Bob to get the whole message. But in this case, Bob just wants to retrieve one of the bits of his choice, or maybe a referee tells Bob which bit to retrieve. So he just wants to retrieve the teeth bit. So just picks out one of them. And we're interested in the probability of him correctly decoding this random access code, so directly decoding this bit. So we just have the probability of correctly decoding the random access code is just an average. If everything's uniform, it's just an average over all possible bits he might want to retrieve, and the probability that the bit that he guesses here is equal to the bit that Alice wanted to send him. Right. Sorry? Oh, sorry, that's just the number of possible bits. Yeah, sorry. All right, so as you've just seen, so now I want to talk about, so we've talked about random access codes. Let's just talk a bit about uncertainty. And Renato has already kind of mentioned entropic uncertainty relations, which I think have a big advantage. So there's additional advantages over the ordinary, the Robertson uncertainty relations. They don't just depend on the spectrum of the measurements that you're trying to make. And of course, here, you know, when you have a Robertson inequality, you need to optimize both the left-hand side and the right-hand side over a state, so it's unclear what the restriction is, whereas with these entropic uncertainty relations, you get rid of these difficulties. So here we just have H is just the entropy here in my notation. T is the choice of measurements. Okay. And we're basically performing a measurement on a particular state sigma. And even though the original entropic uncertainty relation, which I think is by, I can't pronounce his name very well, but Balyuniki Birula et al., you can use the ordinary Shannon entropy, but you can also use you know, a lot of other entropy, so the min entropy. So this is the Deutsch inequality. Okay. So what we're going to introduce now is a different kind of uncertainty relation. We call them fine-grained uncertainty relations. And the fine-grained uncertainty relations, you can just think about in terms of probabilities of alternative outcomes. So, for example, in the usual position measurement uncertainty relation, if I want to measure, you know, I know if someone's prepared a particular a state in some particular, well, if I want to think about it in an information way, I can think someone's encoded a value of position and encoded a value of momentum in a quantum state. Bob gets it and wants to decode that information. The probability that he will get a particular value of x and the probability that he'll get a particular value of momentum, for example, can never be one. Position momentum are maybe a very bad example because they're continuous variables, but I can also think about spins, and then if the probability of retrieving a particular value when I measure sigma x is 1, then the probability of retrieving a particular value of sigma z, the probability that it's, for example, 0, has to be a half. So I can't have both the probability of retrieving a particular value of sigma x and of having a particular value of sigma z. I can't have them both 1. They're restricted. So we can write this as a sum that is restricted. So with probability a half, I measure sigma x. With probability a half, I measure sigma z. The probability of obtaining a particular value of sigma x plus the probability of obtaining a particular value of sigma z is somehow restricted from above. This sum cannot be a half, right? And in the case of quantum, in the case of sigma x and sigma z measurements in quantum theory, it's just 1 half plus 1 over 2 root 2, which, of course, is a familiar number. And the nice thing about these fine-grained uncertainty relations is that so in the usual entropic uncertainty relation, and I think this is one of the other key differences, in the usual entropic uncertainty relation, it's blind to the particular counterfactual measurement outcomes that Bob might get. So if I think of the uncertainty relation as encoding a particular, say, string of information, and Bob is kind of decoding that information, then the probability of him doing it successfully might depend on the particular message that Alice is going to send him. So you have, in some sense, a whole family of relations. So for example, for spin, I have the probability that I will get a particular, that I get 1 when I measure sigma x, plus the probability that I get 1 when I measure sigma z, is a potentially different uncertainty relation, or is a particularly different element of my uncertainty relation to the probability that I will obtain a different set of outcomes. So here I have getting 1 for sigma x and getting 0 for sigma z. So I can label each of my relations, each of my restrictions, by the set of counterfactual outcomes that Bob is going to get when he performs this measurement. Okay. So for each of the possible set of measurements that he might get. And like with any uncertainty, I guess actually we should call these certainty relations because they tell you how certain you are. So if this was one, if you could achieve a value of one here, then you would be certain if you got a particular value for sigma x, you would get a particular value of sigma x with certainty and a particular value of sigma z with certainty. So in some sense, they're certainty relations, and you can think what is the most certain state which will allow you to retrieve this particular value of sigma x equals 1 and this particular value of sigma z equals 1. And this, of course, is just like a random access code. All right, so it's a two. So for a sigma x and sigma z, you can think of it as a particular encoding, and maybe not a particular encoding of a random access code, meaning that here I'm encoding the bits, a two-bit string. So I'm encoding x equals 1, 1 here, and in order to retrieve one of these bits, 1, 1. So Bob wants to retrieve one of the bits, 1, 1. Then if Bob retrieves, if Bob wants to retrieve the first bit, he measures sigma x, and here this is the probability of him correctly guessing that sigma x is 1, the first bit is 1, and this is the probability of him correctly guessing that the second bit is 1. So we can think of this as the probability of correctly decoding a random access code, and here the random access code is encoded in the most certain state. And so we have a whole family of these uncertainty, of these fine-grained uncertainty relations, and this is just just generalizing it. In this talk, I'm going to basically talk about CHSH because it captures the key elements here. But you can, of course, this is perfectly general, so I can think of any uncertainty relation like this, any Bell inequality like this. But I'll focus on CHSH. But this is the kind of the generalization of it. And I think because of time, I'll maybe just kind of flash it up there and leave it to you. But you basically get this whole family of fine-grained uncertainty relations, one for each set of counterfactual measurement outcomes. All right, so we've just seen that uncertainty relations are just like a random access code, so we should think of uncertainty as storing and retrieving information. And now we're going to talk about non-locality and show that non-locality I can also think about as a random access code. So the CHSH, for example, is just we can think of like this. We already did talk about CHSH, and we can think about kind of some general game rules and the probability of them winning the game. And for unique games, what is a unique game? A unique game is that for every question that's given Alice, an outcome of Alice, there will be basically, and there's a unique winning answer for Bob for each of the questions. Or you can just say, so that's what we call a unique game. There's a unique, Bob basically has to get a particular answer. There's a unique solution for him winning the game. So for a unique game, we can think of this as a random access code. All right, and the way we do that is as follows. Let's just kind of focus on Alice rather than thinking of Alice and Bob symmetrically. So Alice is given a question S, she has an outcome A, and now Alice knows that for each of the questions that Bob will get, Alice knows what the winning answer is. So rather than tell the referee her answer A, she could just as well tell the referee the string of winning answers for Bob, right? So she knows that if Bob is given the first question, this is Bob's winning answer. She knows if Bob is given the second question, this is his winning answer, et cetera, et cetera. So she could tell the referee, rather than a particular answer, she could just tell the referee, she could give the referee the string, which is a string of winning answers. And now she gives the referee the string, and the referee now asks Bob to retrieve one of the bits of the string. Okay, so we can view every unique game like this, where Alice is effectively kind of helping with the referee select a particular message in a random access code, and Bob is retrieving one of the elements of that random access code. And We've done this for unique games, but you could, it's a bit more complicated for non-unique games, but it's not dramatically different, just messier. So let's look at CHSH this way. Okay, remember CHSH was the game where they need to have their, so we need A plus B equals S and T, and we can write it as a table of strings like this. So if Alice is given the question S equals 0, then she needs to tell the referee, she needs to give the referee an even parity string, two-bit string. If she gets question 1, she needs to tell the referee an odd parity string. So that's CHSH. So the referee says to Alice, tell me an odd parity string or tell me an even parity string. Alice answers with the appropriate string. So in this case, she's just picking this particular odd parity string if she's asked to give an odd parity string. And now Bob needs to answer 1 if he's asked to retrieve the first bit, and he needs to answer 0 if he's asked to retrieve the second bit. So CHSH is just a random access code like this, and in quantum theory, just because this is the same as CHSH, he can win with probably 1/2 plus 1 over 2 root 2. Okay. So we see basically here that a non-local game is just like a random access code in this sense. Okay. There's one final bit that we need to complete we need to show the kind of the identity between these two things. So the probability that they win the game is equal to the probability that Bob correctly decodes some random access code, but we need to optimize over measurements and, well, we can think of optimizing over measurements and states, measurements of Alice and states and measurements of Bob, but in fact, in this one-sided picture, we can think of it just as optimizing over Bob's measurements and the states that Alice can steer to, that states that Alice can prepare on Bob's site by performing a measurement, and I'll say what that is in a bit, next slide, I think. And likewise, with the uncertainty relation, it is like a random access code, but it's a random access code where we're storing information in the most certain states. And now we just need to see that these two optimizations coincide, basically. That's the key element. So another way of saying it is, another way of saying what we need to now do, we're basically trying to answer the question to show that there's an equality between the winning probability of the non-local game and the uncertainty relation. We need to answer the question in the affirmative, can Alice steer to the most certain states? Steering is the following. Alice needs to basically perform some measurements. Well, what is steering? Basically, Alice wants to prepare some ensemble of states at Bob's site. So we know, for example, in quantum theory that we can perform that Alice can perform a measurement on S and A. She can perform a measurement S and get an outcome A on, say, A maximally entangled state, and she can perform, and that allows her to kind of prepare an ensemble of states at Bob's site. So if she measures in the sigma z direction, she will effectively prepare one of the two eigenstates of sigma z on Bob's site if she's measuring on a singlet. On the other hand, if she measures in the sigma x direction, she can prepare one of the two eigenstates of sigma x at Bob's site. So steering is basically the ability for Alice to prepare some ensemble at Bob's site, either the sigma x ensemble or the sigma z ensemble. And it's cut off in the slide, but both at the bottom of the slide, but both Howard and Alex have thought about these. Howard Barnum and Alex Wiltshire have thought about these kinds of problems. You can also imagine. You can also imagine steering in the classical sense for classical probabilistic theories. So imagine that Alice and Bob have some hidden variable, which is correlated. So here's Alice's hidden variable, which is just a point on a hoop, and it's correlated with Bob's hidden variable, which is a point on a hoop. And imagine that all Alice can do is measure, is the ball on the left or the right? Then if she measures, or she can ask, is the ball up or down on the top half of the hoop or the bottom half of the hoop? Then if she makes this measurement, she will steer to one of these. Either she will know that the ball on Bob's hoop is either on the right or the left. If she makes this measurement, she will know that the ball on Bob's hoop is either up or down, on the top or the bottom. So that's what steering is in the classical sense. It's our ability to prepare some element of the ensemble. And what we find is, in quantum theories, when we perform this optimization, both in the non-local game and the uncertainty relation, we find that Alice can indeed steer to the most certain states. How am I for? Okay. So I'm going to skip just kind of the general picture of showing this, and just kind of show the kind of a picture of possible theories we can have. So, in quantum theory, we have perfect steering. It's only restricted by the no-signaling condition. Alice can steer to the most certain states in quantum theory. This is CHSH here. So, she can steer to the most. So, all these theories have perfect steering. What that means is the uncertainty relation for the optimal measurements of Bob, which in this case is sigma x and sigma z, the uncertainty relation is just the restriction on Bob's correct on Bob's counterfactual measurements is just 1/2 plus 1/2 root 2. It's bounded away from 1, and that's exactly the probability of them winning the game. In classical probabilistic theory, they also have perfect steering, like the kind of example I just gave. And the uncertainty relation there is given by 3/4, and again, the probability of winning in that case is also 3/4. For PR boxes, you also have perfect steering. There's no uncertainty in a PR box. So if once Alice makes her measurement S and gets an outcome A, she knows with absolute certainty what Bob's measurement outcome will be, depending on what measurement he makes. So there's no uncertainty, and that's why you can win the game with probability 1. Now, you can also think about a deterministic classical mechanics where you're not allowed probabilities. In that case, you have no steering, you have no uncertainty, but because you have no steering, you're kind of back down to 3/4. So there are cases where you don't have this perfect relation between uncertainty and non-locality. And it's worthwhile just maybe this notion of steering to the maximally certain state. It's worthwhile seeing it here. So here are Bob's measurements of X and Z. And now, if I'm thinking of encoding a random access code, Alice is basically encoding the strings that she wants to send to Bob. She's encoding them in these vectors here. So in the vector between X and Z is where 1, 1 is. So she's going to perform a measurement, and she's going to either prepare a green, one of these green quantum states, or she'll prepare at Bob's site one of these red quantum states. And you notice they both sum to the identity, and that's why she can steer to them perfectly, because they're both the mixture of these two states sum to the same density matrix, and therefore it won't violate the no signaling condition if she can steer to them. And so she, for example, wants to encode 1, 1, or 0, 0, so she performs this measurement. She's encoding either the bit 1, 1, or 0, 0, and she tells the referee which one she's encoded successfully, and then Bob will try and retrieve one of these bits, either by performing the X measurement or the Z measurement. Okay, so that's kind of on Bob's site, that's how you kind of can see the random access code, the encoding of the random access code into these most certain states for these measurements of X and Z. And in classical probabilistic theory, you have a similar situation where you're encoding the states there, the most certain states, by performing measurements there. So I can think of any theory now basically as a trade-off where I have where basically certainty and steering determine the degree of non-locality, and some of the familiar theories, which all have perfect steering, and that's what's cut off at the bottom, have perfect steering, and so the degree of non-locality is only determined here by the certainty relation, and they all fit along here. But if you have bad steering, like in the case of deterministic classical mechanics, you could be somewhere over here, because here's the steering thing. And so you can kind of think of a theory space where you look at the degree of non-locality, the degree you kind of look at the certainty relations and the steering relations and look at theories in those terms. Good. Okay, so this is, I think, the thing I wanted to talk about most, and it's complementarity. And so, there was a, so we learned, I think, yesterday from Bob, or the day before from Bob, what complementarity is. And I think I got this right. Complementarity is when a red spider meets a green spider and their legs fall off. I'm going to kind of try and put that in information in kind of in terms of kind of a random access code. And so I can think of it as follows. So remember that, so what I mean by complementarity in Bohr sense is that I have two possible experiments I want to do and I can only do one of them. And we want to kind of quantify that. Okay, we want to quantify that. And so, oh, I've lost my pointer. Can people see that? All right. So what do you mean by complementarity here? So remember that that we were thinking in terms of random access codes, all right? So here's the string, say, 10 that is encoded at Bob's site. So what does complementarity mean? Complementarity means that he either will try and retrieve the first bit, or he will try and retrieve the second bit, but he can't do both. And in a PR box, for example, you have perfect complementarity. If you know, Bob has to make one of the measurements, and after Bob's made the measurement, the system is destroyed. Likewise, in quantum theory, when I try and retrieve in the CHSH game, when Bob tries to retrieve one of these bits, he has no possibility of retrieving the other bit. But you can easily imagine playing CHSH, where, remember, the goal is that Bob is going to try and retrieve one of these bits of the random of this two-bit string. And you can well imagine that afterwards, the referee will say, okay, Bob, can you give me the value of the other bit? So I'm going to imagine a game like that. We play CHSH, and then Bob is asked, all right, what's the other bit? And in quantum theory, he has no chance of getting the other bit. He has to flip a coin. Well, so he has probability half. And in PR boxes, it's also probability half. So here we see that the probability of getting the first bit in both PR boxes and quantum theory is different, but the probability of getting the other bit is both maximal. And in the case of PR boxes, that's necessary because if Bob had any possibility of getting the other bit, then Alice would be able to signal to him. But it turns out in quantum theory, Bob could still have some probability of getting the other bit and it wouldn't result in signaling. So that's why we say that there's no, that the complementarity here is not restricted by the degree of uncertainty or the degree of non-locality and no signaling. So what is signaling? Signaling in this case is that Bob would be able to guess the parity. So he cannot, whatever degree of complementarity we have, we must make sure that Bob cannot guess the parity. I think this is dying as well. There we go. Bob cannot guess the parity. So if we have the probability that he gets the first bit right plus the probability that, so the probability of getting both bits right plus the probability of getting both bits wrong, both of those situations will allow him to guess the parity. That has to be 1/2. And so we need to make sure that that doesn't happen. And I can construct a theory, just a toy theory, in which I still have perfect no signaling, but I have a whole lot less complementarity than in quantum theory. And the theory looks like that. So the probability of guessing the first bit right, the first asked for bit right, is still the same as in quantum theory. So it's still, we still have the same degree of non-locality. But if Bob gets the second bit, the first bit wrong, then he will automatically get the first bit right. And if he gets the first Asper bit right, then he has some probability of getting the second bit right. And it turns out that that doesn't allow him to guess the parity at all, and has very little complementarity, because he has a very large probability of guessing the second Asper bit right, even, for example, when he loses the CHSH game, he will automatically get the second bit right. And as well, he also has some chance, even if he wins the CHSH game. Monogamy of entanglement is, in some sense, a special case of this. So in the example I gave, you're trying to get the first bits and the second bit. I can also try and think about just trying to get a lot of information about both bits as much as he can, rather than trying to restrict his information retrieval to getting the first bit or the second bit. And monogamy of CHSH is like Alice playing CHSH with both Bob and Charlie, and you can imagine that one particular way of measuring whether you get the first bit or the second bit is to split up your system, give half of it to Charlie, let Charlie perform a special measurement, let Charlie perform the same measurements you're performing. So that's one way of retrieving both bits. It's probably not a very good way, so monogamy is probably has a lot more of a restriction, because it's just a special case of this. So what I want to generalize this notion, and this is not in the, this is just going a bit beyond the paper with in science. So this is some kind of a way we've come up of kind of trying to quantify what we mean by complementarity in more detail. What I want to think about is, again, a whole bunch of bits, y1 to yn, and I want to think about the kinds of information I'm going to retrieve, what I want to retrieve about those bits. So what is complementarity? Complementarity is basically telling you that retrieving the individual bits, you might be able to retrieve the individual bits, but you won't be able to retrieve, say, both bits. Or you won't be able to retrieve some general information about both bits. So here I have, so this is the conditional entropy. So this is similar to what Renato was talking about. I have a conditional entropy here. So this is conditioned on my state, whether it's a quantum state or some generalized state. I have some state. Is there another laser pointer? This one keeps dying on me. Does anyone? I guess we're almost done anyway. So I'll... So it just keeps fading out. So here's my state, whether it be quantum or some other theory. And this basically tells me how much information, if I perform, now I want to optimize over all possible measurements. And I want to optimize over all possible measurements and then look at how much entropy, how much knowledge I have, say, quantified in terms of entropy, how much knowledge I have about this bit string. So either the entire bit string in this case, and I want to compare it to how much information I would get if I perform a different measurement and only try and achieve information about one of those bits, right? And so this quantity here is kind of quantifying this notion of information complementarity, right? So we have information complementarity, where we think about trying to retrieve different kinds of information, and even though there may be a lot of information about, we can retrieve a lot of information about individual bits, we can't retrieve information about the whole string of bits in whatever form that is. And there's other ways of doing it. I think Stephanie will talk about this is another way of quantifying complementarity, and Stephanie and Thomas Wittig have found that it gives very large amounts of complementarity if you quantify it like this. And it's related to non-contextuality, of course. So because this was an entropic relation for quantifying the degree of complementarity. It's actually related to the positivity of the quantum mutual information. In our ways of quantifying complementarity, we can use any entropy we want. We don't have to use the Shannon entropy. We can use the min or the max entropy. But if I say quantify it in terms of the Shannon entropy, then we know that the Shannon entropy, the Shannon mutual information is always positive. But if we are allowed to perform a different measurement in order to get information about X or information about Y versus information about both X and Y, then this quantity can be negative. And it turns out that you, if you have complementarity, you necessarily have the negativity of some quantity like this. And this can't happen in any non-contextual theory. You basically can show that this violation, this complementarity relation captures this contextuality. Okay, so let me just summarize now. So the key results is that the quantum theory can be more non-local if I were to respect the uncertainty principle using the same measurements, with Bob using the same measurements. So if I want to violate the Cyrielson bound, I will need to have measurements which are more, measurements on Bob's side which are able to win the game, which are more certain. For general theories, you have steering and uncertainty, and that's what determines the degree of non-locality. And I guess another way of saying that is that if steering is the only is only restricted by no signaling, then the local state space is what is determining the degree of non-locality, the local state structure. And finally, although it's cut off, the complementarity of quantum theory somehow is not determined by the uncertainty relation or no signaling. And maybe the kind of the higher level messages, I guess, of this result is that it may be useful rather than just, it may be useful to think of non-locality in terms of its constituent parts. So think of it in terms of storing information and retrieving information. And storing information is like, you're storing information through steering, and your retrieval of information is restricted by uncertainty and complementarity. And there's some trade-off between how well you can store the information and how well you can retrieve the information. And so there's a lot of open questions here. So we've shown that for all games where we can compute the best measurements that this relation holds, but it may be that there's some other game in which this relation doesn't hold. The dimensionality of the quantum systems play a key role in how much you can store, how much information you can store in them, and how well you can retrieve them. So these sorts of questions, I think, are interesting, as well as this kind of notion of what is it in quantum theory which restricts the degree of complementarity. So with that, thanks very much for your attention.
So we have time for a few quick questions. Well, I have one quick question, although it sounds like you may have just answered it in the last slide. So you said quantum mechanics cannot be more non-local with respect to Cyrielson inequalities if you respect uncertainty. Or perhaps you didn't mention Cyrielson inequalities. Are there other types of inequalities with respect to which we don't know the answer? It sounded like you were perhaps saying yes, the ones where you couldn't
Right, so we only know the answer for these games where we can compute the optimal measurements, because it's the uncertainty relation of the optimal measurements. So for any game where we can't do that, then we don't know the answer. So we have some answers for kind of XOR games. So we know for XOR games, for example, that this works for retrieval games, and because the Deutsch inequalities are related to these fine-grained uncertainty relations, we know that there's also in these games a relationship between violating Deutsch's inequality and violating these other Bell inequalities as well, for example. But we don't know the answer for other games or other bell inequalities. Is that your or other
yeah,
bounds?
Yeah, I think that was the question. How does that class of games relate to unique games?
Those are unique games.
Okay, those are it's exactly the class of unique games, or it's a subset?
No, there could be other unique games.
Okay,
yeah, there are other unique games.
Do we have any more questions? If not, let's thank Jonathan and all the speakers in this session again. And there'll be a few announcements.